House Water and Environment.
Good morning.
We have before us Senate Bill 454, and I'll open a hearing on Senate Bill 454. And let's see, we have a dash, please. Anyone want to talk about any other? Dash three amendments are our newest ones before.
Thank you very much.
Dave, come on up. And we did have the dash two.
Chair Welsh, members of the committee, Dave Pennington, Oregonians in Action, speaking in support of Senate Bill 454. The dash threes that you have in front of you are the result of a compromise reached between ourselves and the Department of Land Conservation and Development. I believe, although I haven't formally heard, that there is no opposition to the dash threes. Essentially, what the dash threes create, and there'll be one. I'll suggest one conceptual amendment to the dash threes, but essentially what the dash threes create is review by LCDC of the $80,000 rule with some case studies and a review of those case studies to determine whether the rule needs to be amended and if so, how. We don't tell in the dash threes, the commission, how to amend the rule. We don't tell them to amend the rule. We just essentially are suggesting that they look at the rule and act accordingly.
Thanks.
Couple of questions. What is act accordingly? I mean, Oregonians in Action doesn't want them to write more administrative rules.
Chair Welsh, Representative Atkinson, that's certainly correct. At the same time, they've already got one on the books, so we certainly won't be asking them to be more restrictive. We'll obviously be asking them to be less restrictive. At the same time, I'm sure there's other groups that will go in and ask them to be more restrictive. But the thing that this bill gives, I think, all of us is the opportunity to go to the commission 4 or 5 years after the fact, after the rule has been implemented, and talk to the commission about why the rule either works or does not work, obviously depending on your viewpoint. But we think, given the ag census data, that the rule does not work. I'm sure there'll be testimony to the opposite in front of the commission.
Follow up. So let me ask one more question. What's going to be the outcome? I mean, I can appreciate the compromise language in here. What's going to be the outcome? I mean, what if they come back on September or December 31st and they say, you know, it's a perfect law, perfect rule? Then we've gone through 2 years and. What are the sideboards to say that we need to justify the $80,000 rule?
Now, Chair Welsh, Representative Atkinson, I don't think there in this bill there are any sideboards that require the commission to justify the rule. And we believe that based on our testimony and hopefully some of your folks' testimony in front of the commission during the interim, that we can show that the rule doesn't comport with Oregon agricultural economy. We certainly don't believe it. It does. 78% of all farms in Oregon gross less than 40,000. The average standard necessary. So we believe that we can show that the rule as currently written doesn't work. At the same time, I'm not sure that the governor at this point would be willing to go with any change to the rule as it exists, and so I guess political realities dictate that we ask the commission to take another look at it. That's certainly what we're doing, or that's what we're suggesting. The one conceptual amendment would be on the very last line. We like to change the 2001 to 2000 so that the commission would report by December 31, 2000.
I was wondering why that
happened. Yeah,
one.
Yeah.
Into the next
year. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
not very good. Not very good mathematics.
One other thing that I would note before I stop, we've been referring to the rule as the $80,000 rule. Technically not accurate. The $80,000 rule is measured in 1994 dollars, but with inflation at this point, it is essentially the $95,000 rule. If we don't act, or if the commission doesn't act before the next legislative session, it will be the $100,000 rule. So that's obviously one of the things we'll talk to the commission about, but referring to it as the $80,000 rule at this point, I don't believe it's accurate. Other than that,
may I ask
you
on that point? Has the rules actually changed to say
$95,000? Chair Wells, Representative Taylor, the rule hasn't changed. It says the rule as exists says $80,000 with a parenthesis $1,994. So. That hasn't changed, but I believe, and if Mr. Eber is going to come up and testify, I believe that there are counties now that aren't, that would actually require the additional income. They base it on, I believe, the consumer price index.
Thank you. Actually, some other
commissioners,
if I may. The part of the amendment that begins on line 10 and says about the study of each case as it deems appropriate, that has to do with the cases they need to make this determination, and then prior to making the determination, they'll distribute those cases and take public testimony on them. It wasn't clear to me the first time I read that. It sounded like we're asking the commission to make a case-by-case determination on the rule, but you're asking for them to consider cases that they need to in evaluating the rule. And they're going to select those cases.
Well, Representative Taylor, I believe what will happen is that the department will collect a compendium of cases from the various counties, from all of the regions in Oregon, and gather those case stories, put them together in a package, distribute that package, and then hold a hearing based on the stories in that compendium.
I take it that should the bill pass with this amendment, I understand in general what your position would be during the interim, but that if you weren't satisfied with the results of those studies, you'd probably be back here in the next legislative session. That's a fair statement.
Chair Wells, Representative Devlin, certainly. We believe that the $80,000 rule is the most unfair rule, administrative rule, if on the books right now. I don't think that's going to change until the commission or the legislature is willing to do something about it. But we'll certainly be back if nothing gets changed.
Mr. Chairman, one follow-up also. I would take it, though, if the commission enters into this, and if there's this process to evaluate the rule, I'll ask a direct question. But during this interim process, you wouldn't try to address this issue by the initiative process.
Chair Welsh, Representative Devlin, that is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
The initiative process, from our experience, is very expensive. I'm not sure that we want to commit that amount of resources to that kind of thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not so much a question. I think just a couple of statements for the record, and I appreciate where everybody has come to get to this point. Ideally, I would like to see something different, but I think maybe a study is the best way to get to something different. what I'm going to hope, Mr. Chair, is that the Senate does not concur, so this can go to conference. I'm willing to move this at this point in time simply because of time frames, and at this point, that I would like to see some more interaction between the commission and the interim legislative committee, other than just at the year 2000. I think some reporting at regular committee meetings would be helpful, just so there is give and take, which I think would help both sides in this. So my hope would be that would be allowed to happen. We can add that in. So other than that, I think just for the timeliness of the issue, it's probably time for us to move it so it can get there.
Any questions? Mayor Babb.
Good morning. Chair Taylor, members of the committee, my name is Mayor Babb, and I'm representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. And we heartily endorse the -3 amendment and find it interesting that they are described as a compromise. I know you've all read and memorized our agenda for livability. Been around for 4 years, and one of the primary components of that regarding the $80,000 test is that we asked in 1995 that the commission do exactly what this disaster amendment would do, which is study it and to see if it's working properly. And our main interest is recognizing that when that rule was adopted, it was an experiment. It's recognition that the old rule was not working to distinguish between farmers and people who just wanted to live in the country. So the idea was, we tried this, we tried that, we tried the other, let's try something different. So it seems fair enough and reasonable to see if it's achieving its objective. And that's spelled out very nicely in the amendments in terms of, is it prohibiting genuine farmers from getting houses, and is it allowing people who really are not farmers to get houses? Let's look at it. That's fair enough. So we think it's terrific. And we hope that those of you who are very interested in this issue and in this standard will participate. I hope it improves comments were interesting. And you know, our experience is that if some of you can participate and sit through the process and hear the testimony and hear the analysis, there'll be a deeper understanding in this body next session about what the rules do and don't do, and whether they really are accurate and fair in achieving the objective. So, in summary, we support the -3 amendment and hope we'll pass them. Thank you.
Thank you. Right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ron Eber for the Department of Land Conservation and Development. We are also in support of the -3 amendment. And if I might address a couple of things that have come up and how we would intend to approach this review of the rule and the study, it's our intent to solicit examples from the different interest groups and from the counties with regard to situations that they have encountered, some that we have encountered where someone who is a bona fide farmer wants to get into farming and has been unable to get a dwelling, and then those situations where people who are not bona fide farmers have been able to get dwellings or could under the rules as they're currently constructed, so we can analyze those more closely. A lot of the stories that come forward about the effects of the rule on closer examination show that there are other alternatives for getting dwellings in a farm zone that are available, and the rule itself is not always the thing that precludes someone from getting a dwelling, but there are situations that should be examined. So we would be getting those examples, selecting from those, doing individual case studies that examine those situations on the ground, And then bringing those to the commission and then getting public testimony on those, and then hopefully out of that, if the rule needs adjustment or regionalization or alternative ways of dealing with this subject, that's what we would intend to do, and then the commission could potentially proceed with rulemaking or simply report back to the legislature. With regard to the interim reporting, it has been the practice of the department on a regular basis, at least for the 23 years I've been with the department, that we regularly report to the Joint Legislative Committee on Land Use, which has been a standing committee since Senate Bill 100 passed, and could very easily keep the committee or whatever interim committee is set up by the legislature appraised of the progress of the study. Finally, we would also concur with the conceptual amendment that it should have written in December 31st, year 2000. The clear intent is to get this done and completed so that the results could be brought back to the next legislature. With that, I'll answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Ron Schellenberg.
Morning, Don. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah.
I don't know. I heard on the radio this morning that it's warmer in Alaska today than Oregon.
Not a good day for that.
Not a good day.
I'm afraid to say no, it's not.
It could work. Tomorrow, it could get worse. Yeah. Tomorrow's going to be a better day. All right. Here to support the Dash 3 amendments of Senate Bill 454. Obviously, Farm Bureau is also one of those who believes that the farm dwelling criteria as they exist today are not perfect. That's evidenced, of course, by our introduction of the Dash 1 amendments, which if you adopted, we would be perfectly happy. But that not being the case, we believe that there are two particular problems with the criteria as they are today. And one is that there's only one criteria for the high-value farmland, and that's what's referred to as the $80,000 rule. We think there ought to be other criteria as well. And then even though there are the other criteria, one of the other problems is that it was always in our mind that when you attempted to qualify for your dwelling under the income criteria, that you could consider the income of your entire farm, even though they were non-contiguous parcels, as long as they were in the same ownership. And those two points were the basis of the changes that we made, that we suggested in the Dash 1. Appreciate the opportunity, though, for this kind of study to occur. We'll be eager to participate in that. In our own organization, there's always been division, a topic of discussion when it comes to farm dwelling criteria. What should be the right criteria. We have in our policy a position of supporting the Dash 1 amendment, but even at that, there's not unanimous agreement that that is the best route. Nobody really likes the income test, but they can't figure out a better way to do it. It's objective, and maybe that seems unfair because either you're on one side of the line or you're not. And that's what happens when you have objective criteria. But what is a better way? We're going to be searching for that right along with everybody else during the interim. So appreciate your support for this bill, and we would encourage that. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Schoenberg?
Thank you. Thank you. David Egan.
Honorable Chair and members of the committee, I had not read the proposed amendment prior to writing my statement. I'm not even sure I should distribute it just now. But I would like to make a few general comments. And that is, I feel like there is a concerted assault on the Oregon land use laws, which are basically going to reduce the livability in our state. What I would I close with in my statement was a few lines here, and I'll read this to you. Does a high level of growth in Oregon now mean that the land use law should be abandoned? I feel like that's the reason we're trying to pull away from the land use laws that we established. And I cannot see the reason for that. And then I'll misquote Russell Sadler. Will Oregon stay ahead of the times, or are we just 20 years behind California and 10 years behind Washington? When the land use laws are fatally weakened, we can ask Senator Lim to put our new border signs up. Welcome to Oregon. Things are no different here. I am in the position of owning property in the city, in the UGB, outside the city, and I can see the different levels of taxation on that property. I can see what's happening around that property. And growth and building are not stopped in the rural areas of this state. They're not stopped in the Willamette Valley. These laws are designed to protect the best farmland in the state. I can go outside to where my parents' property is, outside of town here, and I can see houses being built around that property. I can see actually industrial developments being put up, because we fought one of those, which was put on a piece of farmland near my parents' property. We lost. Even though the hearings officer had turned it down, it was referred back by the county commissioners, and we lost in the second hearing. And now we can out there, we can listen to a planning law. But that's one of the things that we have to put up with, but it is also one of the trade-offs. So if you have a piece of farmland, I own some farmland, and it is leased to a farmer, and I'm sure part of his income, which could be considered part of the $80,000, comes from leased property. Matter of fact, I think that's how he built his house originally. So that's about all I have to say. I'm not sure exactly if I can support the amendments or not, but I just wish this 454 would go away. It's a bad bill, period. The original, in any case. I don't know why we're even going to study it. I wish you just folks would just turn the whole thing down. But in any case, that's all I have to say. Nice to see you again, Representative Kefouri. I'm happy you're up here.
Thank you
very much, members of the committee. I appreciate taking your time up. And,
any questions?
I just wondered how we can assure that we have persons who are concerned, as this gentleman is present at those hearings.
I would suggest, Representative Taylor, that maybe the best publicity statewide and through different organizations like Thousand Friends and also the opponents of Thousand Friends, the best thing is I know there are a lot of people out there like me. I'm very passionate about this, or I wouldn't have gotten up at 6 o'clock this morning and written this thing out and come down here. I have a father-in-law in the Oregon Veterans Home in the Dells, and I took a quick trip up there because he's terminally ill now. And I was really tired when I got back, but I got up early this morning to write this because I'm very passionate about these things. Maybe you can tell through my voice how I feel about our state. I'm an ex-merchant mariner, and I've seen a heck of a lot of this world, and there are very, very few places like this left. Please, please preserve it. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Just one comment, and with all due respect to the speaker that just spoke, the Willamette Valley is not the entire state, and things that work in the Willamette Valley don't necessarily work that well anyplace else. So I guess one of my concerns, kind of echo Representative Taylor's concern, was I don't think we're necessarily going to have to worry about Willamette Valley folks showing up for the process. It's people in Baker City and Lakeview that we might have trouble getting to show up, because that's certainly a greater hardship on them to come for the Salem for a half-day meeting and things like that. And so I think there is a genuine concern that all regions of the state be represented in this process, and we should take steps to make sure it happens.
Are you making the point that Marion County doesn't, once I sit off of Marion County, doesn't have
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Marion County is a wonderful county, but Douglas County is certainly different from Marion County. The amazing part is what they consider to be marginal lands in Marion County, what we, the best of what we have in Douglas County. So it's different topography, it's different soil types, it's different everything. And to assume that one set of tests that works well in this, what is incredibly high value farmland, works equally as well in other parts of the state, I think is not dealing with reality. And when you get groups like Farm Bureau that have been struggling with land use issues ever since I have been involved, and it's because it depends on where you are in the state, what your perspective is. And, you know, so as we have struggled to try to find some way to do regional land use planning or whatever we are trying to do, we're going to struggle with this for a long time, I think, it's like five blind men describing an elephant. It depends on your perspective. So,
and I think there's those of us who are agriculture and forestry that do see the value in what Senate Bill 100 back in 1972 intended.
Sure.
We've come a long way and gone sideways with those intentions. And we have a lot of landowners from 5,000 to 500,000 acres in this state that are certainly not wanting this to be a no-growth state. And they see value in identifying exception or lands that are where you can build and being able to do that. We have not gotten in that direction very, very far. So what we see now is no-growth individuals first. The resource land and those who want to be able to grow sensibly. So I think it's time to take some more time to view these considerations and move on.
Lisa, just one more comment. You know, from a personal perspective, in the last 20 years in my business, we have acquired over 300 acres, and not one single acre of that have we acquired for purposes of development. We are a farm, and we're going to continue to be a farm. And we basically have had a simple philosophy, is you don't want to get greedy just by everything that's next to you. And but by the same, and in that light, we are certainly appreciative of the fact that Oregon does treat agriculture better than a lot of states do. And, as far as taxation, and we're incredibly appreciative of that, because for a lot of folks in my part of the state, that's a make-or-break proposition. If they were being taxed at a commercial rate on a lot of their properties, they'd go out of business, and that's the reality. So, but by the same token, I see a lot of frustration in my part of the state trying to conform with a set of standards that just don't really fit very well.
All right, we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 454, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 454.
Mr. Chair,
rest may approve.
I move the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 454.
Rest may approve. Move Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 454. Any further discussion? Any opposition? Yes, Ron?
Mr. Chair, with the conceptual amendment, I will just
go ahead and amend it.
I move the Dash 3, Senate Bill 454 with the conceptual amendment on line 15, changing the 1 to a 0 in the number 2000.
Representative Cruz, the amendment is including on line 15 of the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 454. We'll be striking 2001 and 32,000. Okay. Any further discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
President Cruz?
Aye.
President Atkinson?
Aye.
President Devlin?
Aye.
President Cianella?
Aye.
President Ford?
Aye.
President Merkel?
Aye.
President Morgan?
Excuse me.
Taylor?
Aye.
Chair Wells?
Aye. and the required vote. Senate Bill 54 is conceptually amended. The Pedastri amendment passed to the floor. The due pass recommended.
We just moved the amendment.
Ultimately, I'm getting way ahead of myself. Okay. Pedastri amendment for the conceptual amendment on line 15. So, Representative Cruz.
I move Senate Bill 454 as amended and conceptually amended for the pass recommendation.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Aye.
Aye. Having required member votes, Senate Bill 454 as conceptually and amended as before the due pass recommendation. Who would like to be carried? If you don't want to offer. Representative Cruz would like to carry this. All right. And have no further business, we are adjourned.
I think I might bring forth my minority report tomorrow on the
524
after all your work, Christina.
That's just what I've learned from Tim Crane.